Hell yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so about that draft stuff, I'm noticeably more refreshed than I was last night during the nerd hour. I apologize to all the listeners who got to experience that train wreck. But that is neither here nor there. This is now the NFL draft recap. And I'll just, you know, try not to talk over Dre. I will just be here doing my thing now. Just, you know, talking football stuff. It was supposed to be actually P-Rock and I who are going to be doing this special. But he actually had to do a few things. There was a Mother's Day celebration going on, and it was early. So because of that, I said, fuck it, I'm just going to do it solo. Try to get something in before 4 o'clock when the shoot starts. I don't know if it'll be a full 2 hours. It may be an hour and a half. It may be an hour. That depends on what time my plans are, because either I've got to be ready by 3:30 or I've got to be ready by 4. I'm not sure yet. So let's get at it. First, we're going to start off with a little bit of a recap. We'll start with day one. The draft started with the Houston Texans selecting Jadeveon Clowney, the defensive end from South Carolina. Then the rest of the top five was Greg Robinson, offensive tackle from Auburn, going to the Rams. A little bit of a shocker, Blake Bortles, quarterback from University of Central Florida, going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Buffalo Bills traded up with the Cleveland Browns so they could select Sammy Watkins to bring him across from Robert Woods and have E.J. Manuel throwing to them. And then at pick 5, the Oakland Raiders going with Khalil Mack, the linebacker from Buffalo, which the weird thing about Oakland's draft this year is that they've actually drafted pretty well. That's a massive stark contrast from the fact that when Al Davis was running the board, it was just all batshit crazy picks. They'd be picking a guy who was maybe fifth-round talent with the fifth overall pick and then saying they're going to do well with him. I mean, remember Darius Hayward Bay, then picking him over Michael Crabtree. See how much that worked, Al Davis. Let's face it, down there. It's Al Davis. He's not up there. He's down there. All right. But the Clowney pick makes sense. It's probably the safest pick of the top five. And the safest, the second safest, or even the safest to some people would be Khalil Mack going. They're obviously with offensive tackles, they're usually a safe bet as well. But I think, you know, the two defensive players are worthy by far the safest picks of that draft, of that top five, I should say. Blake Bortles, I mean, I am high on him. I think he's going to be the best quarterback in this class. But still, quarterbacks are way too risky, and it's... And I say the best in the class, but it's not like this is one of those quarterback classes like in 2012 where it was the top three quarterbacks were really good prospects and there was still a depth of prospects throughout the rest of the draft. So that's one thing to kind of hold on to. Sammy Watkins, he's explosive. He's going to be a very good wide receiver. Was he worth giving up an extra first-rounder? Like a first rounder next year, which, well, let's face it, it's the Bills. They've probably got one or two more years of high first rounders in them. So why they would trade that? They basically gave Cleveland a lot of ammunition for next year. Cleveland may very well have two top 15 picks in this next year's draft, and I'll get into the reason why a little later. But there's definitely a very good chance that happens. Then, like I said, Raiders, Khalil Mack, very good pick. Rounding out the top 10, you had Jake Matthews, the offensive tackle from Texas A&M, also a member of the Matthews family, Clay Matthews' cousin, Bruce Matthews' son, and so forth. There's probably about 18 of them in the NFL or who have played in the NFL. He goes to Atlanta. Then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select wide receiver Mike Evans, and the one thing they've been saying all draft after this pick was they're trying to make basketball on grass, and that's basically what it is. I mean, they've got him and Vincent Jackson, just two jump ball receivers. That red zone's not going to be safe if you're a defense trying to cover those just big animals. Then the Cleveland Browns, after trading down and getting that extra first-rounder, they take the first cornerback of this deep cornerback class, Justin Gilbert of Oklahoma State. Very good pick. I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually, because now you pair him across from Joe Hayden, and that is just a nasty secondary. Now they just got to, you know, then they've got Dante Whitner. I think he whiffs too much in the pass coverage, but he's a fantastic in-the-box guy, and he hits hard. So they need to get another coverage safety in their set. That secondary is beast. And then they'll just need to work on the front end, you know, but whatevsies. Anthony Barr, the pass rusher going to the Minnesota Vikings, smart move, very good player. Also a team that needed a pass rush. I mean, their pass rush was practically at this point non-existent this past year. Well, no, they had Jared Allen, but he's gone. They didn't really do much to replace him. So I like the pick. I like the pick a lot, actually. I forget who they signed. I know they may have signed somebody during the offseason for the pass rush, but still, I don't think it's they needed it badly is what I'm trying to get across. Now, they've got – who else they've got? They cut Randall out – they cut Jared Allen, I mean. They signed – trying to find it. They signed Corey Wooten at defensive end. They signed Rakeem Cox. Again, not a group of defensive ends that would just really strike fear into just the hearts and minds of other teams. And, I mean, who else do they have? They've got – what's his name? I forgot. They've got Everson Griffin, so there's that. But, again, though, they needed someone else across from him. They really, really needed somebody else across from him. They've got some decent interior linemen, but they needed another edge rusher. So that hopefully will work out for them, especially because if that makes them better, that means Hammy will cry, and I'll make fun of him more on Brain Stew. The Lions, with the best, probably not the best pick of that round, considering what's there, but definitely the best fit for them. And let's face it, at number 10, not that bad of a pick with Eric Ebron, because he was, let's face it, he was top 15 talent. It's not, I don't think they could have traded down and still gotten him. So, if smart move, get him, because Brandon Pettigrew's not working. He will be gone soon. They needed a tight end for that middle of the field. And the more weapons there are, the better it is for Matt Stafford, the better it is for Calvin Johnson. That's less people to cover him, because if there's more people that you have to cover, there's less defensive backs going after Megatron. Then the Tennessee Titans, they decide, hey, let's rebuild that offensive line a little more. And they signed Taylor Lewin from Michigan, which I'm a little shocked, but I mean, the battle's won in the trenches, and you got to build from the inside out to make a winning franchise. I mean, look at the best two teams in the NFL. And I'm not just saying this because one of them is my favorite and the other one's in the division. But look at the best two teams in the NFL. They're built from the inside out, line to out. And once you do that, then you can start adding playmakers, and just the core of the foundation of the team, though, is that interior line, that offensive line and that defensive line. They make everything work for everybody else on that team. So I thought that was a bit, you know, it was good in a way, but, you know, who knows. New York Giants, after that, at number 12, picking Odell Beckham Jr. from LSU. Deep threat. I mean, they recently signed Mario Manningham, but he's injury prone. They're not that high on Reuben Randall, so they decided to go with another receiver. A lot of people thought they were going to go after Aaron Donald, which would have been a very good pick, but they decided they valued receiver more than they did defensive tackle. I've also heard that there might have been someone else they wanted to that was gone, but I don't know why they didn't go after Donald, who would have helped their team immensely. Then the Rams jumped right on Aaron Donald and are adding even more to that defensive line. The NFC West, it's just going to be that's going to be the new black and blue division after this draft. I'll get more into it a little bit, and don't worry, guys. I'm not going to say every pick for every round, but I'm going to go through the entire first round and give comments. The Chicago Bears can go fuck themselves because they took Kyle Fuller, who I wanted to slide down to the 49ers. He is one of the better cornerbacks in this draft of really good cornerbacks. So I think that was a really good move on their part. And, you know, again, so far not that many head-scratching moves. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, they went with Ryan Shazier, the linebacker from Ohio State. Really, I mean, with a defensive player, not really that many bad choices for them because they're a pretty old team. They needed it. They really, really needed defensive help somewhere. And now they get a linebacker in Ryan Shazier. Zach Martin, the offensive tackle, going to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, let me point this out here, Dallas fans who are pissed off that they didn't go after Manziel. You should be glad Jerry Jones didn't go after Manziel. And I'll get to that later. But he would have been bad on your team. He's got to be on a good enough fit. Dallas is not that fit right now. Sure, they've got dynamic receivers, but there's a lot that needs to be built. For example, offensive line, Zach Martin. All right, that needs to be built pretty well. you know, that needs to be built up so that he's not taking a beating, because Manziel's the kind of guy who needs a good offensive line. If there's not a good offensive line there, guess what? He's going to take a beating, then he'll get injured a lot, and then you'll be regretting it and wishing that they had taken Zach Martin from Notre Dame, who can play any of the five positions on the offensive line. So, I mean, there's that. But everybody just wanted their, you know, Johnny Manziel because he's a local boy. I get it. But he's a bit of a prima donna. He's a bit of a douche. Why would you want him? He's nothing like the state. Well, actually, no, there's a lot of douches. I talk to a lot of Texas people. Half are douches, half are cool. So, you know. The Ravens get C.J. Mosley of Alabama, the linebacker, which, I mean, on paper seems like a good move. But here's my thing, guys. Has there been an Alabama player who's panned out lately? Like, when was the last time a high pick on an Alabama player has actually panned out for a team? I can't remember. Julio Jones might be the only one. It's just weird. Alabama, one of the best teams in college football, but one of the worst teams when it comes to NFL talent. I mean, under Nick Saban, at least. I mean, I can't remember, aside from Julio Jones, an Alabama player who has actually panned out so far. And trust me, there are some who are still out there that no one is sure of yet. And trust me, they're probably not going to pan out because they're Alabama players. They peak in college and then just kind of flounder. The next one, at 18, the Jets pick Calvin Pryor, Louisville, a guy who's gotten compared to Rodney Harrison, and that's a good thing, Dolts. And I'm sure they wanted a wide receiver, they wanted Brandon Cooks, but why spend a high pick on a small receiver when there's plenty of... I'll get to the small receiver thing later. You need them, you need slot guys, but guess what? A first-round pick is a little high for a slot receiver, just saying. The next, Miami Dolphins, no-brainer here. They pick an offensive lineman, Juwan James, Tennessee. He's first-round talent, but a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads because they probably could have traded down a few spots, got extra picks, and still been able to take him, especially with the next couple picks that happened. So the next pick, New Orleans trades up. I guess they wanted to go ahead of Green Bay and pick a receiver, Brandon Cooks of Oregon State. He, again, a little high, but that's probably their best fit for him, is going to the Saints. He'll open up things even more for that pass game. And there's Marcus Colston, Jimmy Graham, Lance Moore. Actually, I think Lance Moore left. Yeah, but no, they've still got one of the better wide receiver cores in the league and one of the best passers in the league. So it works. It's a good fit for him, and they needed that kind of a player because they lost Sproles. And I think Lance Moore is gone. So, yeah, they lost him. Green Bay, they've decided to work on their secondary even more, because they need to work on their defense, because, let's face it, they can't get over the hump against San Francisco, and probably not Seattle, although I'll be rooting for them when they do face Seattle. But I don't know. I think it's weird. But they picked probably one of the funniest names you'll see. Ha-ha Clinton Dix. That's right. Oh, that's right. The Saints have Kenny Stills, too, so they've got a lot of talent there, but whatever. Ha-ha Clinton Dix of Alabama. Again, another Alabama player. I know Alabama, SEC, they love it. But, again, when was the last time an Alabama player has actually panned out in the NFL, on defense, at least? Because, again, Julio Jones, the only one in recent memory who has actually panned out. So, when was the last skill position player in Alabama, at least, who's panned out? Because I think they've got some offensive linemen who've done well. But as far as skill position and defensive line, I've yet to see one actually pan out in Alabama. So, I mean, good luck, Packers. You need it. You need it because you're clearly maybe the fourth best team at best in the NFC. But, you know, and still, that's better. You're still in contention. So, the Cleveland Browns decided to end the slide of Johnny Manziel, who... I'm going to be honest. I will be completely honest here. This was a good first day for the Browns, because as much as I think Johnny Manziel is a douche and he's a little overrated, as of day one, you couldn't think of a better long-term situation for him, especially with the receivers they have and now the ammunition they have to get a future wide receiver in the draft if they decided to just cut ties with Josh Gordon, who, let's face it, once he's cut, would immediately be sapped up by someone out there. But still... next, Kansas City gets Dee Ford, defensive end from Auburn, building up that line. And Auburn actually has made better defensive linemen than Alabama has the last couple drafts. I mean, Marcel Darius was from Auburn, and he's still, despite his recent arrest, is still doing really well. Then one of the better cornerbacks in the draft. Again, we start a little bit of a run on cornerbacks here. But the... Oh, it sucked to see, too. The Cincinnati Bengals signed Darqueze Dennard, cornerback from Michigan State. Another one that I had hoped would fall to the 49ers, because I think he'll be a fantastic corner in this league. But I guess it wasn't so. The San Diego Chargers, on the other hand, they wind up picking up Jason Verrett, cornerback from TCU. He's a little small, but he's a gifted player, decent pick, but I think they could have waited and gotten if they wanted a small cornerback. But then again, look at the division they're in. They needed a guy who can cover the slot. Now they've got a guy who can cover the slot. And that's going to be a theme, especially two picks later. Next one is Marcus Smith, linebacker from Louisville, going to Philadelphia, which, again, they needed. They needed some linebackers there. He's a good fit for the defense for Chip Kelly, so I like that pick a lot. The Arizona Cardinals, with a curious pick here, I think. They picked Deion Buchanan, who they probably could have had a little later in the draft. I think he would have still been around. So a bit of a head-scratcher. Not a bad pick, but they could have definitely traded down and gotten him. But next, the Carolina Panthers, who have been in the market for a wide receiver since, let's face it, they basically let most of their wide receiver core go. Most of them are gone and on other teams, so they needed someone. So they decided to sign Kelvin Benjamin, the wide receiver from Florida State. And massive target. He's like 6'5", 240. He's got speed. He's a guy that will, if he develops well, he's a project, but if he develops well, will become a beast at receiver for Cam Newton to just throw the ball up to. And then the Patriots, with the smart pick, they go after Dominique Easley from Florida, the defensive tackle. A lot of people mocked him at the third round, which didn't make sense to me because he's an immense talent. And this just goes to show you the massive difference between scouts and armchair GMs who do websites, that a lot of teams had him rated high. Not only did the Patriots have him rated high, but Seattle allegedly traded out of the first round because that was the guy they wanted, and he got traded. He got picked a couple picks before them, so they decided to just get the extra picks from Minnesota, which I'll get to later in a few minutes. And then next up, the 49ers selected safety Jimmy Ward. Undersized for a safety, but, again, I mean, I like the pick better when I see it and see that, remember, Earl Thomas is also a small safety. A similar size, actually, and similar playing style. So, in the long term, he's going to groom under Antoine Bethea and become the safety next to Eric Reed and kind of become the center fielder safety that covers well in the pass. Which, again, that's the theme because they've kind of missed that the past couple years because they've had two hard hitters at safety but no one to really cover. Both were liabilities in coverage. Now they've got one guy who's a hard hitter and decent in coverage and one guy who's in Bethea who's really good in coverage while grooming Jimmy Ward and, you know, be that coverage safety. But in the meantime, he's also got the size and skill set to play nickelback, cover that slot receiver. So, what they're doing there, they're not matching the rest of the league. They're matching what the rest of the teams try to do to them because they've got such a good linebacker core that teams decide to do a lot of 3-4 receiver sets so they can try to spread out that defense. And the other good thing about Jimmy Ward is when he's covering the slot, he's also good at run defense. He's an aggressive run defender. So you can't, it's going to be a little harder to run out of the 3-4 receiver sets. So with the last two and rounding out the bottom of the first round, the Denver Broncos picked Bradley Roby, who I'm not high on him. I don't think he's good at all. I think he's going to be the bust of this draft on this first round because he's stiff-hipped. He doesn't move well. Let's face it, he is better because of the people around him. And he reminds me too much of Taylor Mays, who just hasn't worked out in the NFL yet. He's a backup now still after being a second-round pick in 2010. Closing out the first round, Minnesota trading up to draft quarterback Teddy Bridgewater from Louisville. Now, smart pick for them, athletic quarterback, which is kind of in vogue now. But also, not only that, Bridgewater goes into the easiest offense to acclimate into as a rookie. Let's face it. He's got Greg Jennings to throw to. He's got Cordarrelle Patterson. But let's face it, that offense is mostly handing off to Adrian Peterson. And as long as he can do that well and get the passes when he needs to his rookie year, they'll be fine. So that closed out the first round. And you know what? I will point out the Redskins trading down picking because they didn't have a first rounder. But Trent Murphy of Stanford, they've got him. Pretty good pick for them for their defense. Another guy who can rush the passer. And also at the same time, I will point out that the Who did the Browns have the pick from so I can read their pick as well? Let's see. Indianapolis in the second round. They wound up picking Jack Mowert from Ohio State, which was a decent pick. So that, you know, that's picks for every team. And I guess I thought it was a pretty good round one. I mean, there's a lot of talent this draft. But now I'm going to go into a few different stories here on the recap of day one and preview of day two. First one being Clowney versus Mack. I think they're going to be the best two defensive players, you know, best two picks of that first five. Which one's going to be better? There's a lot of debate on that. I mean, Clowney's that rare athletic talent. He's got his few personality twerks, but he is a man. He's a man playing amongst boys in college, and he's going to have that athletic ability. And again, like they've said, they're going to play him at outside linebacker. On you know, they'll probably put him on the side J.J. Watt's on, which slides in Brooks Reed. So they really, you know, they really improve two positions there by doing that. Not only that, at one point in the draft, the Texans, I believe in around, and I'll get to that later when I'm talking about it, but the Texans actually, I believe, also picked, the Steelers picked to it. But the Texans also picked Lewis Nix late in the draft. I mean, much later than expected, and that's, again, fixing that offensive line, because the key is getting after Andrew Luck and the Colts, because they're the team to beat in that division. Red Sox and chat. The P-Rock was supposed to be on this show. I think he's taking JK out to a Mother's Day dinner. So that was moved a little earlier, and I was gonna just not do the show, but I decided fuck it, I'll just do it solo, because I can talk football. I can talk football for hours myself doing a show, so that's why I'm doing that. Now, do I think that Mack will eventually be the better pro than Jadeveon Clowney? But I think it's one of those 1A versus 1B situations where it's not that Clowney's gonna be bad. I just think that Mack has the better upside and will be the better player at some point, especially considering Oakland. If there's one thing they actually do right, it's defense. All right, their offense is usually a horror show for the most part. But again, though, I mean, Oakland had a good draft, and I'll get more into that later. But still, and they've got Schaub, who got a bad rap in Houston. But I mean, whatever. Now the other thing too, the Cleveland Browns on day one, the Cleveland Browns were practically the belle of the ball for the draft. I mean, they got Justin Gilbert, they got Johnny Manziel in two key areas they needed. Well, they didn't really need cornerback as much. They could have taken Watkins, but they have, you know, Little and Josh Gordon and Nate Burleson, so that wasn't considered much of an issue for them during day one. And I mean, like I'll say in a few minutes, it becomes a bit of an issue. That position became a bit of an issue, but you can't fault them for going after a cornerback not knowing that Josh Gordon failed a drug test. So not only did they draft Justin Gilbert at cornerback and Johnny Manziel at quarterback, they also acquired a first-round pick from Buffalo, which, again, will likely be high next year, because while Buffalo's getting some talent there, they're a much better team than they were 2 years ago. They've still got a little ways to go in that division. So there's still a couple teams above them in that division. Now, with that, the other team, I mean, day two was starting. It was probably the early afternoon when I got news of these two stories. The first one being that the 49ers actually traded for Stevie Johnson, which just makes that wide receiver corps even more ridiculous. Here's what after this trade, their wide receiver corps going into day two of the draft. Now it's Michael Crabtree, Anquan Boldin, Stevie Johnson, Brandon Lloyd, Quentin Patton. Those five receivers are better than any five receivers in the league. I will just say that right now. And Brandon Lloyd might not even make it, especially with the pick that the 49ers take in day three. But again, I'll get to that later. So, great trade. They got Stevie Johnson for a fourth rounder that could turn into a third rounder. And
then they and then day two they ended up trading down and getting an extra fourth rounder next year anyway. So they basically got Stevie Johnson for free. And the thing with Stevie Johnson, and I think this is the main reason why they wanted to get him, Stevie Johnson was made expendable. He's a great, really good receiver, but he was made expendable by the fact that, Buffalo traded up to take Sammy Watkins. So, you know, they've got Sammy Watkins, they got Robert Woods, they decided to trade Stevie Johnson. Well, the Browns probably should have traded. I think if the Browns knew earlier, they might have been in the market for this, but I also think the Bills didn't want to trade him within the conference, so that might not have helped. But they ended up doing that. And then, probably an hour later, we get the news that Josh Gordon, the Browns wide receiver, very, very talented Browns wide receiver, but let's face it, kind of dumb wide receiver. He failed yet another drug test. He's gotten to the point where his next failed drug test was going to be a season-long ban. So he faces a season-long ban now based on the suspension. The other thing is that not only is he facing that season-long suspension, but also his counterpart, Nate Burleson, broke his arm, at training camp or at a team thing. So now two of their top receivers are gone. They've got Greg Little, who does not fear anyone. They do have Jordan Cameron. So, I mean, that's cool. Jordan Cameron's actually a very good threat at tight end. But, there's free agent options available, too, as far as getting a plug-in, since Josh Gordon won't count against their roster if he's suspended for the year. So that's a good thing. It's kind of like, this would be smart. Maybe, Miles Austin is still around in free agency. There's a few other guys. So they can sign a few guys to one-year prove-it contracts, and they'll be fine, I think. Now, the other thing, too, I'm going to talk about the quarterbacks, actually. I'll start with the quarterbacks here. There were only two drafted in the first round. The first one being Blake Bortles, which surprised me. Actually, three quarterbacks. Never mind. Three. Blake Bortles at first. I think a lot of people were expecting Manziel to go first. I think they were expecting him to go to Cleveland at six. Or Cleveland at four, which surprised a lot of people because they wound up getting him 22 picks later. But they expected him to go there. He didn't. He slid all the way down to 26. 22. They traded up to 22 and got him. And here's the funny part, the funny stat. The Cleveland Browns, the last two quarterbacks they drafted in the draft were Brady Quinn and Brandon Whedon. Both times, the other two times, they also traded up, I believe. No, they might not have traded up for Whedon, but they traded up for Quinn. They picked both of them at 22, and now they picked Johnny Manziel at 22. So that's a little worrisome. That might be a little worrisome for Browns fans. That just screams bad luck. Or maybe third time's a charm. You never know. It is crazy, though, that he ended up, just because they drafted him, they sold, I think, something like an extra 1,500 season tickets in the day after. So from a sales standpoint, they killed it. But, again, they got him. And they wound up, they're going to sell a lot more tickets. They'll make a lot more money, which means they can put more into free agents in the future and make the team better. And I think that's the thing people don't realize. If you get that big-name player that everyone is just sick of, oh, yeah, they did trade it for Whedon as well. Or they traded from the Atlanta trade. But that's how they got Brandon Whedon. But Manziel will sell tickets. It'll be kind of like that Tebow effect. Oh, no shtick zone with the picture. Now, for those who aren't listening live, it's basically a Browns fan taking a picture of themselves in a Tim Couch jersey. And now, attached to that Tim Couch name, you've got Couch crossed out, Detmer crossed out, Wynn crossed out, Patterson crossed out, Holcomb, McCown, Garcia, Dilfer, Fry, Dorsey, Gradkowski,
Anderson, Quinn, Delholm, Wallace, McCoy, Lewis, Hoyer, Whedon, and now Campbell not crossed out. But cross that name out and put Manziel. Actually, I think Hoyer will start this year, especially with the lack of wide receivers. They'd be better off suited having Johnny Manziel sit 1 year and wait for Gordon to come back. And actually, I think is that the nameplates crossed out too? That is a fantastic picture. I think that might be a mannequin too. That is hilarious. I'm a big fan of that picture. Blake Bortles, I think, is going to... I mean, I don't know. I think he's one of the better quarterbacks in this class. But, I mean, is there a worse situation to go to than Jacksonville? Again, this is reflecting it as of day one. Jacksonville makes some moves in day two and three that are actually un-Jacksonville-like. So, they're another... And Jacksonville is actually another team with a wide receiver who is... his status is shaky for this year. So... but what they did, instead of unlike Cleveland, was they addressed it day two and are going to be better for it, I think, at least. They double-dipped on receiver with trade, so in round two. So they know they had an issue there, and they addressed it. Cleveland decided to not do that, and were like, hey, we'd rather build the rest of our team, which makes sense. You know, I mean, they also added an offensive lineman because you do need to protect your investment. They got a guy that a lot of people thought was going to go to Seattle, but a guy who can play five positions on the line as well, so or at least three positions on the line. Cleveland then later ended up getting what was it? And the thing with Cleveland too, I mean, they can't next year's wide receiver class. It's I believe decent. I'll have to look into that, but they've got a you know it's not bad. I'd say not. I mean. Not as good as this year's, but, you know, again, they're building it the way they want to build it. They've got a new GM. They got a new quarterback now, new coach. So, and offensive coordinator knows what he's doing. So, hopefully that, you know, goes well for them. I think the Browns deserve to finally start winning things. You know, they've been the factory of sadness for way too long. And, oh, man, literally just talked like for 30 minutes. And what I'll do, guys, I'm going to go on a break and then I'll be back. I'm going to talk, you know, because I'm going to go on a break early because, again, there's the chance that I may actually not be on all the way till 4. I do have plans today. I either got to be ready for 4, I got to be ready for 3:30. So I'm going to take a break now. I'll be back and I will talk about day 2 and some other stories from day 2. So I hope you guys are enjoying this football talk, and I will be back very shortly.
Here at More Life Radio, we're all radio professionals, especially Kevin from Alcohol by Volume. Marvel as he winds his way through the twists and turns of Skype.
Oh, you're about to get a Skype call,
then. Here we go, answering the call.
So, yeah, not to interrupt this exciting hockey talk, but what's going on, guys?
And call not found, and he dropped me. That's fantastic.
It's under the impression this was a drunk show, not bore everyone that's listening show.
Well, I'm still in the process of drinking.
I think we lost Kevin, or Kevin decided to be lost.
You're still in the process of boring people.
And I just realized I put Dennis on hold somehow. This is that nightmare that I've been having of at some point finally getting on call and talking to somebody and being on air, and everybody else just dropping. Dennis is back
there
now.
There you guys are.
Sorry, look Dennis.
Wow, fucking radio professional over here doesn't know how to add people to conference.
Alcohol by Volume, Tuesdays, 6 to 8 p.m. only on morelikeradio.com.
Do you like video games? Are you a little antisocial? Well, listen to Antisocial Gamer Radio. Tuesdays from 3 to 5 on morelikeradio.com.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Conte with Kenny Michaels from the Conte and Kenny Show. And we just wanted to let you know about a brand new podcast we are doing called Conte and Kenny Shorts.
It's a bunch of stuff that we had from newer stuff that we just re-release from our regular 3-hour show on Monday nights, but we also have dug around and found all the good stuff that we've been doing for 7 years. Or if you like the crazy stories, there's a ton of them. We just got to find them, grab them, put them out.
Yeah. The podcast is anywhere from 20 to 35 minutes. And you get like two or three quick segments with a couple of little things in between, you know, little cute little things. And so far, people like it. So the best way to do it is to either go to ContiKenny.com or just subscribe on iTunes.
And also, remember, I've only stopped doing cocaine for about 3 years. So there's 4 years of cocaine.
Ah.
Remember that. Just as much drinking.
BC and AC. Before Coke and after Coke.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. I like it. BC and AC.
BC and AC.
So, there are some good times.
Yep. This is Conti and Kenny Shorts, a podcast of a podcast, which I like to say, based on our show, the Conti and Kenny Show.
Podcast of a podcast.
Yeah, because we do a show, but it's also a podcast. So that's a podcast of a podcast.
But we do a show, not a podcast.
But our show was still podcasted.
But if we podcasted it, then it would be not a show. It would be a podcast. But if we do a show, then we podcast it, and then we a podcast of a podcast. But that doesn't sound right.
Do you think people are still listening now?
No, that's they're why they not go even to podcasts.
They're not even listening to this commercial.
Why are you arguing with me?
I don't know.
You're completely correct.
Conti and Kenny Show Shorts. Conti and Kenny Shorts from the show. The Conti and Kenny Show on More Like Radio every Monday night, 7 to 10.
We had to shorten it up because we didn't think we could do this much longer.
It's over 2 minutes. How are we shortening this up?
No, I mean our careers.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks.
Enjoy.
We have just learned that Father Huber, one of the two priests called into the room, has administered the last sacrament of the church to President Kennedy. We just have a report from our correspondent Dan Robert in Dallas that he has confirmed that President Kennedy is dead.
Yeah! everybody. This is Alexa. You can hear my Uncle Sean say terrible things on a Hippo Juice show. Wednesday night from 7 to 9, followed by Joe from 9 to 11. And now mark out Radio with Big T and Dark Fox is on Wednesday too. Join them during their new time slot, 11 to 1 a.m. Only on morelikeradio.com.
Join Marianne and Kitty on Daytime Divas, where Marianne's milkshake brings all the creepers to the yard. And their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. Daytime Divas, Thursdays and
Mondays from, yeah, not mortar.
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zunes, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Yeah! So, what's up? We're back. We're back. We're back. So, this craziness is going on here. Yep, that's right. I'm not patient with my music beds today. Sorry. But we got Roy Black on Crack and Chat. Hey, so for those who don't know, this is the one-man NFL draft recap special because there's no brains to today. I wanted to put something in the slot because I don't think there was I don't think there was a best of put in the chat, and you know I got Hammy's approval on that, and I heard there was no tattoos and touchdowns today of all weeks. I want to point out, guys, of all weeks to not do a show. This is like the biggest football week outside of opening day in the Super Bowl, like opening week in the Super Bowl for football. Of all the weekends to take off. This weekend to not do a show. You guys should have been doing, with no Sully show, you guys should have been doing, a four-hour special or some shit like that. But, you know, I figured I'd do it. And I like talking about the NFL draft. I didn't think I'd have it. By the time I would have an opportunity to talk about it in a serious manner, it would be too late and it just wouldn't be worth talking about. So, day two and three recap. I'm not going to read over every pick like I did with the first round. I'm just going to highlight picks in each round. For day one, some of the notables in here, Derek Carr going to Oakland. Derek Carr, the younger brother of David Carr, famous first-round bust from Houston. And let's face it, better than his brother, I'll say. And he doesn't have to play right away. They actually... wait, who's letting you down? Again, though, Roy Black, there's no brains to. Because Hammy, you know... Hammy had a Mother's Day plans with his mom, so there was going to be no show, nothing here today except for maybe a replay. So that's why this show is going on. But Sully, there's no Sully show today because Sully, congratulations, by the way, Sully, is married now. His wedding was yesterday, and now it's on to the honeymoon. There's going to actually be best ofs for the Sully show for the next few weeks. And again, tattoos and touchdowns, I don't know why. Maybe Mother's Day stuff, maybe they took their moms out to breakfast or what do they do in Long Island. Or Staten Island, I mean. Not sure. But, you know, there's that. But, yeah, Derek Carr, he'll have a better pro career than his brother. Oh, mostly because he wasn't a Tedford quarterback. He is going to a team that's not going to rush him to start right away unless Max Schaub gets hurt. So as long as Schaub stays healthy, he'll be fine. Atlanta taking a pretty good defensive tackle. Rashid Hegman, he was projected to be a first-rounder, so they got some value there. Tampa Bay gets
Austin Seraphin Jenkins, tight end from Washington, another big-bodied receiving tight end to go with two big-bodied fast receivers in Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. So, again, it'll just be jump ball in the red zone on them. The Jacksonville Jaguars, like I mentioned earlier, took Marquise Lee in the second round. Who else we have? Philadelphia, a couple picks later, takes Jordan Matthews, the wide receiver from Vanderbilt. Just a big, fast wide receiver. Seattle, with their first pick in the draft in round two, this is in round two, though, takes Paul Richardson, the wide receiver out of Colorado, just so that they can, you know, they added speed to that offense. Steven Tuitt, expected mid to late first rounder, goes in round two to Pittsburgh. Let's see if there's anyone else. Cody Latimer, wide receiver from Indiana, goes to Denver. He's going to basically replace Eric Decker. The running back, which is actually becoming an increasingly devalued position. Oh, the other guys. That's true. But anyway, the running back position, and I think it's bad that this is happening, but the running back position is being greatly devalued in the NFL. And you'll notice every year now, the first running back taken, except for Trent Richardson a year ago, and he might as well have been taken rounds later because he's kind of been sucking. But the running back position has been greatly devalued over the past few years, the past few drafts. I mean, last year, the first running back taken was in the second round, Giovanni Bernard. And then the first running back was taken much in this draft was taken at pick 54, I believe. Yeah, pick 54, with the Titans taking a running back because they cut Chris Johnson. And then, right after that, another one was taken, and someone took Jeremy Hill from LSU. That would be actually Cincinnati, speaking of, took Jeremy Hill. And then the next running back to go, and the guy who a lot of people are saying is going to be the best running back in the class, and I'm not just saying that because of who picked him. I've been hearing that from various videos when I was trying to find a reason to go, why do they go running back over cornerback, aside from the fact that Frank Gore is aging? But Carlos Hyde going from Ohio State going to the 49ers. So, you know, that was the first kind of running back run. And the next running back run would happen a little later. But these are three guys who probably would have been early first-round picks if this were probably 5 years ago, when the running back position was a lot more valued in the NFL. But running backs now, they're considered a dime a dozen in the league now. So people aren't expending as much, like, you know, as high of picks on them as they used to. And that's a shame because, well, actually, no, it's a passing league now, and that's why. But eventually teams are going to combat the passing, and you'll have to start running again. And that's when the running backs will start getting drafted much higher again, like they were in past years. It's very cyclical in the NFL. So, you know, everyone copies each other for a while. For example, on offense, everyone's copying, say, the Denver Broncos, for example, or the Lions or the Eagles now. But on defense, everyone's going to be copying teams like the 49ers and Seahawks. The Ravens, for example, are another team that'll be copycatted. The Steelers, historically. So that's just how it's going to happen in this league. So, and then eventually things will have to change. A team will have to change up, and that's kind of how you stay relevant over the years if you're a team that's been contending for a while. Or you're just New England and you've got a genius head coach who can adapt to pretty much anything and keep you in contention. Maybe not win Super Bowls in years, but still keep you in contention. And so, like, if now running back is devalued, but eventually I think that value will go back up over the years once everyone starts figuring out how to combat the passing attacks that have gone in the league now. What's the other notable names? We had Stanley Jean Baptiste going to the New Orleans Saints. They're rebuilding that defense still. Coney Ealy from Missouri, another guy projected to go late first round, going late second round. Jacksonville doubled downing on the receivers, taking Allen Robinson. And I would talk more about this pick, but I'm going to later. The New England Patriots surprised everybody, taking Eastern Illinois quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. And it makes, in the long term, it makes sense, but this is a team that's trying to contend with Denver. So in that respect, the pick does not make sense. And then after that, Jarvis Landry of the LSU Tigers goes to the Miami Dolphins. So they get a wide receiver to add to that passing attack. And I thought that was very good. Seattle got people scratching their heads, taking Justin Britt from Missouri at offensive tackle, but they've had a few head scratchers in the past that have somehow worked out for them. So we'll see how this one goes. Next up, and then round three happened. Houston, still not taking a quarterback, takes C.J. Fiederwitz. And at that point, a lot of people thought Houston was going to trade for Ryan Mallett, but they wound up not doing that. Then Morgan Moses, one guy who was in the green room for Virginia, goes to Washington, offensive tackle. Then the last guy in the green room was USC center Marcus Martin, just a big-bodied center. He goes to the 49ers. Then the Browns and take a linebacker, Christian Kirksey. Now remember, at this point, they've taken no wide receivers. And also at this point, they're down two receivers on their roster. Let's just keep that in mind while we're going through this draft. They still had a fantastic draft, just a lot of people are scratching their heads as to why they didn't address receiver earlier. Let's see, who else do we have here? Going a little further down, you had Lewis Nix free-falling down to pick 83, goes to Houston, again, as they're rebuilding that defense even more. Oregon receiver Josh Huff goes to Philadelphia. A rare instance of a team picking a guy from the former college coach's team. Dante Moncrief goes to Indianapolis. He's the big, fast wide receiver from Ole Miss. And that was a guy I kind of wanted the 49ers to pick. But at that point, they had already traded. You know, I mean, I think they were probably going to hope he fell to their pick next pick, but he didn't. So they wound up trading out in the fourth round with the next pick. And with the pick from that trade, the Cleveland Browns take a running back, Terrence West from Townsend. You know, they needed a running back. I mean, they needed depth. I don't know if they need a starter because they already have Ben Tate, but, I mean, it works. Another running back, Jaree Archer from... Actually, Minnesota ends up picking Jerick McKinnon from Georgia Southern, another running back. So this is kind of the... second mini run on running backs, along with Trey Mason earlier in the round, and Charles Sims earlier in round three. So we're on the second run of running backs as Jaree Archer also goes to the Steelers, and then the little bit of a tight end run continues with Richard Rodgers and Crockett Gilmore going to the Packers and Ravens, and then the 49ers. And this is going to be a theme for their draft, especially on day two and three. They got a few guys that they could basically just stash on the PUP list or the injured reserve for a year. They'll be able to work out, but and get stronger and work on the team facility. But you know they won't play this year. And this guy is Brandon Thomas. Now let me tell you a little bit about Brandon Thomas. For those who don't know much about him, he is a guard/tackle from Clemson. Really big, really good, really physical offensive lineman who was projected to be an early second rounder, possibly even a late first rounder. The problem is, during one of the workouts, he tore his ACL, which basically automatically means he's not going to play this year. So that dropped his draft stock pretty considerably. The 49ers took him at pick 100, and now... Again, there were a lot of fans kind of wondering why they hadn't taken a cornerback at this point, especially with the guys who were available. And I can actually answer that. Look at they pick a center who can play guard, and they pick another guy who can play guard, both who are immense talents. Now, Daniel Kilgore is currently penciled in as the center for the 49ers. But if Marcus Martin plays better and outplays him, they've got a starter at center for the long term. And not only that, next year... they may not keep Mikey Upati at left guard. Now they've got Brandon Thomas, who can play left guard very effectively. A guy who is, expected to be a first round talent, who slipped because of injury. They pick him. They can stash him for a year, kind of like what they did to Tank Carradine and Marcus Lattimore this past season. And now those two are going to be pretty much part of this year's rookie class as well, technically. Because they'll actually be playing and competing for spot, you know, for playing time. So I thought that was a smart move. Then, after that, you've got the Eagles taking a cornerback from Florida, Jalen Watkins. Another cornerback, Breland. Again, this is a deep one for that position. The Jets finally go with a small receiver. And as much of a beating as the Jets take, this was a smart move waiting. They didn't go for Brandon Cooks. They didn't waste the first rounder on them. They actually got a corner safety in the round one who could be compared to Rodney Harrison. Then they picked a receiver here, Jalen Saunders from Oklahoma, who's a smaller slot guy. When, again, not that much worse than Brandon Cooks, and they got him three rounds later. And, you know, Brian Stork, the center from Florida State, goes to New England. And then the 49ers take a guy who probably should have went two rounds earlier, in Bruce Ellington, the wide receiver from South Carolina. I think he took a little bit of a fall because he hasn't been playing that much football. But he's been so good for them now after only playing two seasons. And it's actually an interesting story because Bruce Ellington, for his first 3 years in college, was actually a star basketball player on that South Carolina team. And Marcus Lattimore actually talked him into becoming a wide receiver during the 2012 season. You know, for the 2012 season, just telling him, listen, you're good in basketball, but you've probably got a better pro prospect in the NFL. You know, so maybe you should play football. So he convinced him to play football. And now they're going to be teammates again on the 49ers, which is kind of a cool subplot. But very quick. He's not a burner. He doesn't have just straight end speed. But what he is he's the kind of slot receiver that'll take the top off that defense because he'll be quick with the routes. And you'll need to have someone pushed back there so that they're going to be someone to tackle him once he gets the ball and is getting that yards after catch. So it's a really good pick. And, again, he probably won't get much playing time this year because when you're on a team that has Anquan Boldin, Michael Crabtree, Stevie Johnson, Brandon Lloyd, and Quentin Patton already, you're not going to get playing time. So, you know, but that he'll have very good receivers to learn from. Three veteran receivers. I mean, he'll probably be better served to learn more from Boldin than he would from Crabtree or Stevie or Brandon Lloyd, but still, plenty to learn. And who knows what will happen. Crabtree might be gone next year. Boldin's 34. So, they, you know, him and Patton could be a good duo. Or they could just pick a receiver next year and have a good core still. Then, continuing in the third round, the Rams have, you know, pick Maurice Alexander, safety from Utah State. Ross Crockell, Cockrell, probably one of the funniest last names, goes to the Bills. The Seahawks, before that, take Cassius Marsh, a pretty good pick for a defensive end from UCLA. He's a guy who either he's also just as good as Barr, or he's a guy who greatly benefited from the fact that Anthony Barr also played on UCLA. We'll see. Daquan Jones, defensive tackle, goes to Tennessee Titans. The Jets take Andre Williams, the running back from Boston College. The Giants, I mean, take Andre Williams, the running back from Boston College. This guy, again, another guy who probably would have been about a second-round pick had he had this been a different year where people were putting higher stock in running backs. Then cornerback Aaron Colvin of Oklahoma, a guy who was another guy who was a stash pick. The Jacksonville takes him. He was injured at the Senior Bowl, I believe. And they'll stash him for a year. Very good talent, very good player. I kind of wish he had actually fallen to the 49ers so they could stash him as well, but again, and some teams can afford to stash players because they have talented rosters. Keith McGill, a guy who a lot of people thought was going round two, goes two rounds later to Oakland. Logan Thomas, the quarterback, he winds up going to the Arizona Cardinals in round four. Packers take Carl Bradford. I'm just looking up some names that I recognize here. DeAnthony Thomas from Oregon goes to Kansas City. And then Kevin Fort goes to New Orleans. He's a linebacker from Cal. The 49ers did a no trade down here. They had their first couple fourth rounders. Dante Johnson, I should say, ends up going to the 49ers in that next pick. As my shit's freezing. Nice. Anyway, so he goes there. He's got the size, and this is a key thing with this draft. There's a lot of guys who are just big-bodied cornerbacks who are getting taken earlier now because of the play of certain ones. Like, for example, Richard Sherman, a big-bodied cornerback. That's kind of the in thing now. And the 49ers like to get size, too. Both teams like to just have big defensive players who can go. It's an obvious pick. That's the first cornerback off the board if you don't count Ward. Pierre Desir, a couple picks later, goes to Cleveland. And I honestly think the 49ers were hoping Desir fell to them, but he didn't. He went two picks earlier. So they got Dante Johnson. Both are developmental guys. Both will probably end up working out. Oh, God. In round five still, and it's... Hey, that's good, though. I'm killing time. Round five, Round five, the first name of note to be picked was up was Devin Street from Pittsburgh going to Dallas. He's another burner receiver. Ryan Grant of Tulane a little bit earlier goes to Washington. And then after that, Aaron Lynch, defensive end from South Florida, going to the 49ers. He's a guy who's a very talented player but kind of troubled, and hopefully this guy won't be an idiot like the rest of the idiots that they've had this offseason. Still a little annoyed about that. But Jeremiah George goes to the Jets at linebacker. Arthur Lynch, tight end from Georgia to Miami a little later. Shaquille Richardson to the Steelers, you know, goes there. Let's see, who else of note was in this round? A.J. McCarron goes to the Cincinnati Bengals in round five. I mean, I guess it's insurance for Andy, you know, Andy Dalton, but Andy Dalton's probably much better than A.J. McCarron will ever be, so there's that. The Tennessee Titans spend a sixth-round pick on Zach Mettenberger, and that's a guy who won't play right away this season. They've got Jake Locker, though he'll play. And he tore his ACL late in the season, so it, you know, could be an issue. But they'll groom him. Maybe he'll be well. Maybe he'll just be a backup. Who knows? And then another 49ers stash player, Kenneth Acker from SMU, I believe. He's a stash player. I believe he was injured. Or no, I think the one they picked later, but whatever. David Fales from San Jose State going to Chicago. Kendall James, cornerback from Maine, going to Minnesota in round six. E.J. Gaines, cornerback from Missouri, going to the St. Louis Rams, who are also knocking it out of the park in this draft. One of the couple teams you could say are doing that. And then, let's see who else here. We're still in round six. And at that point, that's the last couple notable names in that part of the draft. And then we go to round seven. And, you know, again, a lot of guys, most of them will probably not see an NFL roster at any, you know, down the road. But, again, that could, you know, could also not be the case. Caleb Ramsey from BC goes to the 49ers. And now the most notable name to be picked up in round seven, Michael Sam. Actually, no, before Michael Sam, right before Michael Sam, the Dallas Cowboys pick Ahmad Dixon. Ahmad Dixon in round seven. Let me preface this by saying that Ahmad Dixon was originally thought to be going in round three. That was the projected round for him. He wound up going to all the way to round seven. That is an insane value pick for the Cowboys. It's weird seeing that that Dallas and Oakland are not just having batshit crazy drafts. You know how weird that feels that they're drafting safe? They're not just swinging and missing on people? It's weird to me. But the most talked about seventh rounder you'll ever hear of, Michael Sam to the St. Louis Rams in pick 149. There's a lot being made out of it. He's surprisingly getting more press than Jadeveon Clowney, who was the top overall pick. You know, I guess it makes sense in a way, but it happens. So that was that's the recap of the picks in the draft for the. You know, I went through every round mostly. I mean, cherry picked some names. Now, I'm going to talk about a bunch of things from here. First off, Trent Baalke, GM of the 49ers, going trade crazy again. Before round two, he traded next year's fourth that could become a third to the Bills for Stevie Johnson. With their first pick in the second round, he trades down to Denver's spot, lets Denver take a Cody Latimer. And then the next pick, they trade up. Now, what they got from Denver was next year's fourth and then a fifth and a seventh. They trade that fifth and seventh to Miami to trade up to the pick after their original pick, and that's when they pick the running back. If that's not draft trolling, I don't know what is. And then they trade down again, and then numerous other trades. I think they did something like five trades that whole second day, if you include the Stevie Johnson trade. So he was very busy, and they still ended up drafting 12 players and trading for Stevie Johnson. And that's what happens when you've got a good GM. Now, the Browns had a really good draft. Let me just say that. So you can't really knock much about their draft. The one thing you can knock, though, they responded to the possible Josh Gordon suspension and the broken arm of Nate Burleson by not really addressing receiver. I think that was probably one of the worst things they could do, was have that hole in that position and not respond to it at all. I mean, holy shit. You guys could have done much better than that. And you got, there were so many receivers you could have taken. Maybe they took one, but they need at least two. And granted, like I said earlier, Miles Austin is there. There's a few other options at receiver who are still there to be signed. Maybe we'll see Miles Austin in Cleveland. Maybe. But, again, if you're going to start Johnny Manziel from day one, which I hope they don't do, I hope they give him a year to groom and let Brian Hoyer get his chance, because Brian Hoyer, before he tore his ACL, was killing it for the Browns. Let's face it, the Browns are probably a playoff team or contending for a playoff spot, if not for the fact that Brian Hoyer got hurt. So, but then again, they wouldn't have next year's first rounder as well from Buffalo along with their own. So there's that as well. But he deserves his shot before they put in Manziel. That's what I'm just saying. Let Manziel develop. Let him be a better quarterback under Pettine. Now, there was a bit of a quarterback freefall, not just Manziel. There were a few. There was Bridgewater, who originally, early in the process, was the consensus number one. Then he fell all the way down to Minnesota's pick when they traded up with Seattle. And then for Derek Carr, Derek Carr was another guy who people thought was an early second, borderline first. He fell to the early second when a lot of people thought someone would trade up and get him. God, who else fell? There's too many. A.J. McCarron fell late. The guy Houston ended up taking fell a couple rounds. It's just most of the quarterbacks were going late this year, and there was a whole big what to do about the quarterback class and how good this wasn't going to be great like 2012 or 2011, but it was going to be a good quarterback class, a good deep quarterback class. And maybe that's why teams waited, because there were other positions to fill and there weren't that many quarterback needy teams. Jimmy Garoppolo went about where he was supposed to go, but he's not going to play for a few years. The Patriots have Tom Brady for at least the next 3 to 5 years. At the least. So, Garoppolo, poor kid. He's going to, but then again, he's learning behind one of the greatest of all time. So, can't really feel sorry for Jimmy Garoppolo in this case. Now, another North story of note, the Texans had a chance. They probably could have traded for Ryan Mallett right now, and they probably still could. But they decided not to trade for Mallett. It just kind of surprised me there. They need a quarterback, unless they decide they want to wait on one. And they got one late. They got Savage late. But still, you could have had Mallett. Mallett's going to be a good quarterback. He's another guy who the Patriots drafted because they thought they could afford to. And he wound up, he's just been sitting for the last year waiting for his chance. Now Garoppolo's going to do the same thing. Houston could have given Ryan Mallett that chance, and they decided not to. I mean, who knows? Maybe they will work out a trade. This could have been a thing that might not be happening. It might not have been happening had they not gotten Garoppolo. And listen, it takes a lot longer than you think to work out a trade in the NFL. So, that could very well be the case. Is it best for Garoppolo right now? No. But, it's just, it's just weird. I think that Garoppolo could have played well. Played well right at the gate. Or at least, in his second year, could have developed. And, could have been decent. He may still be decent. He may still be a good quarterback. Who he reminds me of from the game film they showed and what they were saying about him, his kind of like his physical attributes? He's a lot like Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco was a high first rounder. So he's very similar. He's got a live arm. So he very well could be another Joe Flacco. And listen, for as much as you want to say about Flacco after getting his contract, that's not a bad comparison when you're talking about a guy who's going to be in Belichick's offense. Down the road. Unless Belichick leaves by the time that happens, then he's just screwed all together. Now I'm going to go to another subject here. Mike Pouncey. Mike Pouncey is probably the dumbest person I know. And then again, he went to the University of Florida, so is that really a shocker? There's been a lot of winners just from that college who've gone into the NFL. But he is such an idiot. Holy shit. When Jaquan James was drafted by the Miami Dolphins, he sent out a tweet saying, "I can't wait for all the gifts these rookies are going to get us vets." Which, for those of you who don't remember, that was one of the things they were doing to the rookie offensive linemen in Miami, in that Miami Dolphins report. Later on, not only did he delete the tweet, the Dolphins pretty much made him delete his Twitter. Because that looked so horrible in the wake of the Jonathan Martin stuff and that Dolphins report that came out. And again, another guy who doesn't know better. You know, a lot of people like to rag on someone like an Alden Smith or like a Josh Gordon or like a Justin Blackmon. But what Mike Pouncey did scares me more than what those guys did. Because they already ran one team out. And you can say what you want about Jonathan Martin. I mean, the dude was battling depression and then at the same time going through that shit. And how many people would have been able to last a year hearing the shit that he was told from Pouncey, from Incognito, from all of them? Who would have thought? Who would have been able to for that long before saying, fuck this, I'm out? So, and there's a lot of people go, oh, man, I would have punched him if they did it. No, you wouldn't have. If you're someone who's saying that you would have punched someone in that situation, guess what? You would not have. So stop it with that. Just fucking stop. Okay? But it just, again, the Miami Dolphins have been doing their best to overcome the fallout from this whole situation, especially that report that came out, which NFLDolphinsReport.com, if you want to read it. It's very lengthy, but it's a good read. And I just don't get why. Why would they think that that was a smart move to do? Why was that a good idea to the Miami Dolphins? Or not to the Miami Dolphins, to Mike Pouncey. On what planet is that a good idea? And again, he's lucky he's a good player and considered a leader on that line, but he needs to watch because he's just making the rest of the team look bad. And eventually, no matter how talented you are, they will end up washing their hands of you, Mike Pouncey, you fucking dolt. So going from one story to another, Michael Sam, I mentioned earlier, got drafted by the Rams. So it's a big deal in the NFL. Listen, he's not the first gay player in the NFL. And I think Charlie Casserly even pointed this out, that when he was in Washington, they had players who were gay. There are players who are gay currently playing in the NFL. But the big thing with him is he's the first openly gay player in the NFL. So that was the whole big deal there. But again, there are players who are gay who are in the NFL. They just hadn't come out of the closet yet. And I think if Michael Sam ends up not being a big distraction for the Rams and it winds up working out, I think you may wind up seeing more players actually doing that and actually coming forward with that. Who it's got to suck to be, though, is Kerry Rhodes. Because here's a guy, talented enough safety, but there were the rumors that he was gay. And this is before Michael Sam came out. There were the rumors that he was gay, and that's why he hasn't been signed by a team, because everyone thinks it'll be a huge distraction. Him, that whole thing there. So, but, you can get interested. There was the suspicion that he was being blacklisted because of his rumors of his sexuality. Then he denied that he was gay or that he was blacklisted. He said his absence from the league was a product of him wanting to do other things and not finding the right opportunity, referring to his interest in acting and producing and the amount of money offered. So, it could be the fact that people think he's gay. It could be something else. But everyone's asking about Peach's bailing. Listen, again, the Mother's Day celebration with JK was pushed back. It was pushed forward a little earlier. Otherwise, he would be on here too, and I'd have someone to bounce off of. But that's neither here nor there. Now, the funny part about this pick, aside from the fact that it's a well-publicized seventh-round pick, is them showing the response of him getting the phone call that he was being drafted. Because at this point, we were in the last couple picks of the draft. There were four teams that were giving him interest, the Rams, the Ravens, the Steelers, etc. And again, he gets the call, and they cut to the video. He's visibly, crying tears of joy with this. And not only that, but he's got his boyfriend next to him who looks like Aaron Rodgers if Aaron Rodgers were a twink on live TV. And, eventually they kiss on TV. So that not as hilarious as the next part if you're watching NFL Network. And that's Rich Eisen doing just the most awkward reaction I've ever heard of a, from a commentator. He's just like, well, that's the first time you'll see that on the draft. So, yeah, congratulations, though, to Michael Sam. Like, he stumbled through that. Just that was how awkward that was. He stumbled through that response about just Sam and his twink kissing. So I wish I had the video of that because I'd really like to play that. Just his reaction to that video. And, yeah. Actually, wow, got through most of the stories. It's almost 3:30. Again, I'll probably cut out at 3:30. I might. I'll see where this next part goes. But the one thing is that the rookie acquisition doesn't actually end with the draft picks because there are still guys who don't get drafted who teams still have an interest in for one reason or another. Some guys maybe weren't drafted because of personality issues, injury history, or just the fact that they just, for whatever reason, slipped through the cracks. Let's see here. I'm looking up the undrafted free agent list. Because, there are actually some pretty big names who are still available who were signed by teams in this year's crop of rookies. And this may end up being one of the last things I talk about. I'm going to leave a little before 4 because I may have to be ready to actually do Mother's Day stuff. So, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms. I'll say that as well. But undrafted free agents. And these are guys who, let's face it, they very well could make the team. A lot of them won't make the team, but some do. Now, I'm going to go through and look at some of the names, some of the bigger names on here. And I'm looking now. All right. If SB Nation will stop taking slow to load so I can look at the lists here. A lot of teams signed a ton of them because they had, you know, extra spots. I think the 49ers maybe signed 5, and there were a couple teams that had too many players already. I think the Jets had like 12 picks, and, you know, so I don't think they had many they could sign. Marcus Haggins, fullback from Miami, goes to the Atlanta Falcons. And the funny part is hearing players say they'll sign with someone and then saying no. The Atlanta Falcons will sign the cornerback from Cornell. The Ravens, let's see. I'm looking through this as I'm going. Jerry Rice Jr. of University of Nevada at Las Vegas goes to the Baltimore Ravens. He's playing wide receiver. It's weird the 49ers didn't bring him in, but still, you know, Jerry Rice Jr. gets a shot. Mostly probably because of his dad, but still. Buffalo Bills sign a couple. I mean, Jimmy Gaines from Miami, the linebacker. Who knows? Oh, good, my computer's freezing. You know, but. Yeah, awesome. So there's a nice huge gap here. So I'll just go over the undrafted free agents again because my recording, there's a huge gap because my computer froze a bit. But again, going through those undrafted free agents, and let's see what else we got here. Jared Wheeler from Miami going to the Panthers. They also got Denicius Allen from Michigan State. The Bears, they got Christian Jones, the linebacker from Florida State, who was expected to be drafted high. They also got Jordan Lynch, the running back from Northern Illinois. Let's see what else here. The Bengals, they got a few. I mean, nothing really to shake home at. The Browns got, wow, okay, that's a huge amount of undrafted free agents for the Browns. They got a bunch of receivers there. Chandler Jones, the receiver from San Jose State. Kenny Shaw from FSU. Willie Snead from Ball State. They got, who else here? Anyway, and probably my recording cuts out. Hooray! Yeah, another gap of everything because SB Nation blows. Awesome. Yeah. After this other gap. Fuck SB Nation. Done. After this other gap of silence. So there's basically I'm going to have a lot of editing to do on the file for the podcast part, but before he wasn't drafted. So he's going to be another one. Before he wasn't drafted. So he's going to be another one. But, you know, all right, tired of the site. Tired of it. It froze me up a few times, and now I've got to do editing. You know how pissed I am about that? The fact that I've got to actually do editing for a long day. Fucking dickheads. So, I mean, there's, and again, it's not that there's not talent to be had in the UDFA class. Sometimes there's guys who fall through the cracks. Either they're small conference, small school guys, or just, you know, for whatever other reasons. But, let's see, no notable UDFAs. Let's see here. Uchis Purifoy. He's a cornerback from the Miami Dolphins, Florida Gators, who actually hasn't signed with anyone yet. He actually forewent his senior season, entered the draft, and did not get drafted. It hasn't even been signed yet. And that's a guy who a lot of people consider like a second-round talent, and he didn't go there. So there's that. Now, it's almost 3:30. I am probably going to end up just getting the fuck out of here. So hope everyone had a good time. The shoot will be on at 4. I've got to get ready. You can check me out at HipsterPunchy on Twitter.
Have you ever met a girl that... Have you...
What the fuck's going on here? Yeah, there we go. At HipsterPunchy on Twitter. Follow all the shows on More Like Radio. Go to morelikeradio.org. Have a good one.
From the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair and a short miniskirt. I just got on stage dripping porn with